buddy Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing. And on it goes, Tom, with the excessive heat warnings.
In effect until Sunday evening.
I have one word for this year in Tucson, Arizona. Excessive. I tell you.
You mean you're not going to put your thumb on your nose and raise your fingers and wave them?
No, not at all. It's the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, Friday, August 4th, 2023. Our radio station, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk, will begin year 14. You notice I'm no longer saying anything about 13. Well, I just said it about year 13. We'll begin year 14 in January for our radio show, 36th year on TV and radio in Tucson, our worldwide live listening and podcasts at buckmastershow.com, where we have that very extensive archive going back to the first week of our radio project. That was January of 2011. So pretty much 98% of the shows are there for you in the archive. Our live line for our telephone interviews, if folks want to join us, it's 790-2040. That's the live line number. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We have such loyal backers of our program and friends in the media, including Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Dan Scheer is here, the editor of those two fine papers. And Dan is a big supporter of our work here. Thank you, Dan, for your support.
Yep, thank you for what you do.
We also want to thank Dylan and his team, which now includes our friend Jim Nitzel, the TucsonSentinel.com, big supporters of what we do here, along with Tucson Local Media Group. Their portfolio of publications includes Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. And as I say, Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, and I forgot to mention that Dan is also, as if he doesn't have enough responsibility, with
keep
those two papers, he's the editorial director for now more than 30 newspapers in 13 states owned by Sierra Vista-based WIC Communications, pretty much all papers west of the Mississippi.
That's
right?
Correct. That's
You've
correct.
Got one even in Louisiana, almost
yes.
on the bayou.
Yeah, there we go. And looking at more.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Well, it's good, I guess, for the company. Jan Lesher is here, Pima County Administrator. Jan, what a weekend we had last weekend in Pima County.
We sure did.
You didn't get off the bus yesterday, either did I.
No. Nope.
I've never seen anything like it in our area of the Central Foothills in 35 years.
Bill, I'm a native, and I've not seen anything like it in lots of parts of town. I'm more on the west side, and I had never seen the rain that heavy, you know, for a period of time. And of course, I think that was causing so much of the trouble was then the breakage and the winds. It was that combination. And I, you know, I of course lived here during the floods in '83, so
this was different, though.
It was very different here in '83.
It was steady for days.
This was that microburst, if you will, and the damage that it caused.
And everybody in our neighborhood, it seems like, has had the roofers out inspecting the roofs, doing the trees. I know we had the tree people the other day. This is not cheap to start having trees removed, as you, as the administrator of Pima County, understand, because there are a lot of trees down on the medians, like between, for instance, from River Swan to up to Sunrise. Do you guys farm that out to contractors on the median there? Because just about every tree is down.
It isn't. No, yeah. It's our wonderful transportation department working to clean all that up again. Same problem we've got with the debris in the roads. There were so many parts of trees and limbs of trees out in the middle of the streets, and trying to get those things cleaned out. Even when people got utility back, it was still hard going for a while.
Those are can be budget busters, but you, as the administrator, I guess when you do your annual spending plan, you have to take that into consideration, right?
We do. There's always a contingency. There's always problems. I have yet to see us get through one entire year without some sort of emergency, either big or small. And it's just part of what we prepare for.
All right. Dan, I know you've got a stack of stuff for Jan.
Yeah, so you are, the county's working on toward an October meeting where you're going to be talk about what you want the legislature to address next year. Mm-hmm. And there's a memo here that has a few things from Pima County. And one of them is talking about bids and other things that you right now have to put in newspapers or legal notices or whatever. And you want to change that. What exactly do you want to change?
The change has been, Dan, looking at the ability to put those notices electronically. How do we present them in an electronic format? How can we get them out in public distribution that might not include simply the printing in a newspaper?
But everything in a newspaper is not just print, it's online. Right now, if you go to our website, you can not only look at all legal notices that have been placed in our paper, but statewide. And so there is a place online, and I'm not going to bat for newspapers. I'm going to bat for a third party being involved, because it kind of looks like the fox is guarding the hen house if you were to put these on your site, which is what the proposal is.
It is, and that distribution, and you and I were chatting a few moments ago, and I'm anxious to follow up with you, because I think that the intent has been to do two things: to save some money so that we can put things out without paying for the costs of publishing them in documents. And the other thing is we're seeing more and more people these days accessing information electronically, which is why we've been looking to put it up. As you know, what that does, though, is can remove that third-party validation so that we are not just putting up our own notices and monitoring our own notices. So I'm interested to get a little more information with you. You indicated you'd connect me with some folks that we might be able to do both and be able to get it out through the electronic distribution, as you note, and make sure that we've got, that we don't have, we're not guarding our own hen house,
right,
as you will. Right,
right, exactly. And as I say, we already have the mechanism in place, and this has been done across the country. If you think about a newspaper and you're thinking about that thing on your driveway, it's
different thing.
It's just not where we are. So, Bill, can I ask another question regarding these legislative priorities?
Dan. Okay, you have the floor.
So I was really nervous as I was reading this legislative agenda, as you really want to amend the Arizona Public Records Law to add certain things. Let me quote from your document that you want an exemption for records solely related to the internal personnel rules and practices of an agency and interagency or intra-agency memorandums or letters. You don't think that the public is interested in that type of stuff?
I think they are, and I think we want to keep putting that out. Part of that, and I think if you notice and you're looking at that memorandum, that is one of the recommendations that came to us from the county attorney's office to look at how we might make sure that there's, if there's personnel records, if there's documents, how can we take care of those items? Much as you've commented about the change in the newspapers, the change in the way that information is made public, how people are looking for public records, and trying to see what avenues there might be to ensure protection of someone's personnel rights, or something relating to their personnel records. That's been a concern. If you're noting, I'm happy to follow back up with our county attorney's office and with the folks who are distributing those public records to see if we've got a hitch in the giddy up somewhere there that we need to make sure we're ensuring that the public can get access to all public information as long as it's not intrusive about an individual. And that's been my concern.
Right. And as the document points out correctly, there are a lot more public records produced these days because there's email and there's Teams meetings, notes, and all this type of stuff. So if someone asks for something, it's going to be much more difficult to do it. And you talk about the hours and hours that the county is going through to provide fulfill public records requests. Number one, it's your job because you work for the public.
Yeah.
And number two, though, you introduced the idea of possibly charging people for it. Is this really aimed at what we would all call frequent flyers, the people who are going in and willy-nilly seeking thousands of documents, maybe just to clog the system? Or what is this aimed at?
Dan, I don't think we're trying to stop people from accessing public information. And part of that, as you can see, so much of what we do is completely accessible on the website. So just about, as any of you have looked for a memorandum, we put a lot out there.
Sure.
I think the concern has been what you speak to. I've seen a couple come in this week that were looking for every email or any communication between four or five people from 2010 to today. how do we begin to indicate if something is, you know, is that fishing expedition, if you will, or too broad? And balance then the absolute right for anyone in the community to get get information without it being bogged down by the give me 20 years of information and let me see if I can dig through for this.
Well, do you think that it is out of line, because I don't, to help people narrow their requests so that you're not going after 20,000 documents?
And I'll tell you one of the things we've been looking at. When I was taught, when I was at the state, that is an acceptable thing to do, to say, this is overly broad.
Good.
This is overly broad. How do we then, you know, help me understand what you're looking for? That saying every email for 10 years probably isn't going to help the recipient any more than it is, you know, our side having to sort through that. Help me narrow the field, narrow perhaps what that window is, and then get some clarification in order to respond.
But ultimately, you're going to be looking at the state to either provide funds for staffing to help you wade through all of these requests. Is that really what this is about?
I think it is, and it's, as I mentioned, it's also really something that we've been looking at the attorney's office, because these days when they're dealing with depositions and any of the legal documents, the depth of the information, just the quantity of the information that they're digging through, the number of personnel they've needed to add to staff simply to respond to these kinds of concerns. So I think that's part of the assistance, is just somebody to help us make sure we're getting it done right.
All right, it's Buckmaster on a Friday afternoon. Jan Lesher is here, Pima County Administrator, and Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News. Speaking of memorandums, Steve Christie, District 4 Supervisor, who was my guest yesterday on the show, he said that he voted in favor with the rest of the board on the pay raise for Pima County employees. That was a unanimous vote, as you know, Jan.
Sure.
But Steve said that his real motive was that I guess he had to join the majority to then add a memorandum to re-examine
this. He would like to have the motion reconsidered.
There you go.
And you have to be on the prevailing side in order to reconsider. So he voted in favor, it appears, in order to be able to reconsider. And what he's put on the agenda for Tuesday, on the addendum agenda, is just that, a motion to reconsider.
What about this pay raise? Can you kind of give us the overview of it and why you think it's a good deal?
Sure. And the focus for me right now is not the compensation is part of it, but what we've been going through is a classification and compensation analysis and a study. One thing that we discovered, if you know, we've got over 7,000 employees in a variety of different job descriptions and classifications. I think the importance, bottom line of classification, is so an employee can come in at a grade or a class and know how he or she might be moving through a system, what their future looks like, where could they get to if they stay with the county. That classification system and how one job relates to another and or is it consistent across the county, we're discovering that 1957 was the last time that a significant analysis of the class and comp study had taken place.
Really?
So what we're looking at is making sure that everybody is in the right job, they're in the right area, where they should be within the structure of the system. It's taken a, you know, kind of a blob that has morphed over the years, and trying to get a wireframe on it, get a structure onto it so people can see what the system looks like and know that a program manager in one department is or is not equivalent to that program manager in another department. So the classification analysis is what's taken the significant part of that. We then went to the board and we're saying what we'd like to do, though, is also not only tells us the classifications, it tells us the market rate for those positions so that we can go in then and look at each of our positions that, again, over the last 60-some years, maybe moving around a bit, and make sure that they are in the right spot. So we find where the market is for a position. We've determined that as policy, we were recommending that our employees be at the 50% mark. 50%, you know, half the people are in that area, we're making more, half the people are making less. So we are not pushing the market, but hopefully it lets us keep the employees we need. When the smoke clears away from that and we get people in the right position and looking where they are at 50% of the market, there is salary adjustments that need to be made, and we have the majority of the county employees would see an increase. That is capped, however, and I know one of the concerns that has been expressed is that it could be an astronomical cost, but it can only be what the board has budgeted for it to be this year, which is about $15 million, with a few million that we can use to spread or to smooth, if you will, when you get compression going on. So what we've looked at is how do we accommodate getting people into the right job, the right salary, moving people up if they need to be up, looking at a cap of the, no one can come in and say, well, you've been $50,000 below market this year, you're getting a $50,000 raise. That's not happening. We're proposing a lower cap. And so that's what we're looking at, is really getting our system back caught up with where the structure ought to be, how one employee relates to another. And hopefully, I can tell you going through it, you know, for everyone, change is hard. I'm guessing it'll be another 60 years till people try this again. So we want to try to get it. I think I'm the only person that was actually alive when that occurred.
Oh, my gosh. 1957. Some of those, what were they talking about? I don't think they were talking about information technology or IT specialists.
Not quite.
They were probably talking about who's going to be able to type a certain model.
Well, it's a handwritten document, I can tell you.
Oh, my goodness. This redo of looking at the whole classification might help simplify your hiring process, because the hiring sign is out at Pima County.
I mean,
you guys have a lot of openings still, right?
We do. I will tell you what does make me happy. I was looking the other day. We're hitting about 12% vacancy rate. We were I've been really tracking this since January of 22, figuring out how we come out of pandemic, what does government look like when we're right-sizing after the volume of dollars that came in response to the pandemic. And we were we're almost 20%. And when we become anxious about what are the programs we can begin to look at, the board began to make different determinations about September with vacation time and flex time and a few of those sorts of ancillary benefits that employee might have. And since that time, we've ticked it down consistently. 1 month in July of 22 was a bump. But other than that, we have been steadily moving down and are now at about hovering just under 13% vacancy.
That's good news.
Very good news.
We'll take a break right here, Buckmaster, on a Friday. Dan Shear sticks around, as does Jan Lesher. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today. Pima County Administrator Jan Lesher. Dan Scheer is my co-media host today, Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. Jan, we were talking about the county, the raises and the whole classification system. That was an outside company that looks at, they have some kind of proprietary formula or something?
CBIZ is the company with which we contracted, and they do this nationally, and they have a proprietary data, if you will. So they have about 100,000 different jobs and positions that combine into that. So when people say, who were the market? Who did we compare against? Was it, you know, Eloy? Was it Maricopa County? What was it? It is a mix. And it includes private sector, because these days, if we have you know, people who are driving trucks or doing things for which there's an active market in the private sector, any of the jobs, I guess many, we have to put that into the mix as well.
And one more question about county workers. They're working at home still. I know it was, of course, a big deal during the pandemic, but a small percentage still have chosen.
Some do, and it really depends on the position. When the pandemic hit, Pima County had not did not allow telecommuting, so it was a real adjustment for us as an organization. And we began to see some positions work well in that. Most of our employees, I don't believe we have anyone that's fully telecommuting. People can communicate, telecommute maybe 4 days a week. We have departments that have an A and B, and people are out 1 week or back in the next, so that everyone has an opportunity to come in and sort of touch the mothership and be part of the system. But if it's important for their, if they can do their job from home, many do. A byproduct of that bill that I think we're looking at very, very closely is how do we then decrease the footprint of the buildings owned by the county in the downtown area. That in the old days, you know, your importance in an organization might have been noted by the size of your office, and that's not true anymore. So we don't have people who are telecommuting, are in the office 1 day a week, and have one big office to come back to. We're decreasing the sizes. We're looking at shared space, you know, opportunities for people to use shared conference rooms, et cetera, with the hope being that we can eventually consolidate and return back, hopefully, in sales to the private sector, one or two buildings in the downtown area.
All right, here's Dan Scheer. Dan?
I want to give Tucson Agenda a shout-out on this one, because I reported it at first, but I'd like you to fill in some gaps. In 2018, the county bought Golden Pin Lanes, a bowling alley. The idea was to turn it into a Pima County service center. It's been 5 years. At the time, to her credit now, we learned then Supervisor Allie Miller said $4 million for renovations or the project. She just couldn't see that happening. It's going to go much more. Well, it is much more. It's well, well over $30 million and counting. What's going on there, and why is it so far over? Is it over budget, or is it, happening?
Well, it is over the initial budget. I'm trying, you know, it's one, because if you look at from 2018 till now, particularly this last year or two, costs have gone up significantly in cement, steel, the things we need in the building. When I look back from decisions we made and comments we made about what was going to be the trajectory of that land and the time for it, we are significantly behind schedule. And I think that part of being behind schedule has caused those costs to go up. So what we're looking at is what we'd initially hoped was a building that would accommodate probation and pretrial services and community workforce, as well as the health department. We began looking for land initially for the health department, and that's what we're back to. We will go in a first phase and relocate the health department from a location at Prince and First that we've been looking to move out of that rental property for a decade. So we will be able to put in the health department, and then there is space there that's available for us in the years to come as prices go down or other dollars are made available, where we could then eventually, I hope, go back to the service center it was meant to be, to include all those other disciplines. But initially, we will be moving in only the health department.
So the bottom line, though, is why do they go from 4 million to, you know, 35, 39, 40 million?
Well, I think when we... I don't have in front of me, Dan, exactly what went into that first $4 million. I think that a land acquisition was a big chunk of it, as well as the demolition and such. I think that Supervisor Miller is accurate to note that how do you build the big building? At one point, they were looking at a three-story parking garage. That was not going to be done at a $4 million basis. So those modifications were made along the way. It is, changing scope significantly, as well as costs, is what caused that to escalate.
Well, I tell you, there's no way to quickly lose faith other than to say something that $4 million is now $35 million. And I think that's what's happening here, because everyone understands the increases and that things change, plans change and everything. But it's almost as if in 2018, when that was put out there, that $4 million number was put out there, that the county could not have possibly thought that it could do this in that budget. Were we lied to?
Dan, I don't think you were lied to. I don't know. I'm hating to evade your question. I don't know what was included in that first package at the $18 million and what was projected to be the costs. Was it just the land? Was it the renovation? I don't know how we could have indicated that the cost of a multi-story, multi-purpose building would have been done for $4 million. And I apologize that I didn't.
Yeah, so no, I'm
stumbling
your
and I apologize.
No,
I don't
you're...
know what those numbers, but I am happy to do a little bit of research and get back with you, mm-hmm. Dan, for your readers and Bill for your listeners, and do the best we can to explain how this did come from point A to point B.
What is the update on, to great fanfare, December 6th, the board approved this battery, American Battery Factory. This is a Salt Lake City-based lithium battery startup company planning to invest more than $1 billion to build a gigafactory complex up by the airport that eventually, they say, could have 1,000 workers. I haven't heard anything about what's going on, so what do you know?
Well, at this point, they are moving through those initial initial phases that there's now that they've got land, they know that they're coming in. What are the final plans, ultimately design, land preparation, getting the business ready to go. I don't know exactly what day they are to go live. Happy again to follow up with you on that one.
But I
know
it's still a go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Last I'd heard, there were some changes, as I understand, in leadership at the company.
Oh.
Don't know if that's what slowed it down, but our economic development team is telling me that it's moving forward, and we have every reason to believe we're excited about it opening up in Tucson as we were in December.
Also in my stack of old business that I would like an update on, Old Tucson. New owners at Old Tucson. What are you hearing about that?
They are, again, making great progress. I think what we're looking at, we saw them during the summer, just to bless their hearts, in the last couple of months start a summer concert series. And I did see video from someone's phone. I think it was a Friday night a couple of weeks ago when they were starting an outdoor concert just as the first of the real monsoons began to hit. So I think as they began to open up it's been a difficult time, but they are, every sign we have is that they are doing well in the market. They're beginning to get their numbers back up. And I think as many of us had our fingers crossed, are also looking at an opportunity for some movie making to return to Old Tucson.
And they've got Fright Night coming up. Mm-hmm. Halloween
there
is
you go.
Big deal.
There you go.
I have one more item, my third item in old business that I would like an update on, the situation with the jail. The exploratory committee has been kind of going over what's going on with the jail. What are they finding?
They are continuing to meet in the work groups, Bill, and they're looking at the operations, what's the physical design, the facility, as well as funding. So what we've asked that group to do is really take a look at the facility and do we need a new jail? As I think we've mentioned before, new to me is not necessarily just taking down one tower and building another one. New is how we run the jail, and actually, it is the sheriff's to run, but what are those best practices, and how do we design a jail that allows for something that is not only helpful for the employees, but those who are in the facility, and do we have the right kind of standards we need? They have been meeting with their work groups later this month, they really move into a public outreach phase where the results of the working groups thus far will be shared with the public, and we'll be looking for comments and public comments, anticipating going back to the Board of Supervisors in September, possibly early October, to report to them what the findings of this group might be.
And Danny Sharp, who has had a great career in law enforcement, he was the Oro Valley Police Chief. I think he's leading the group.
He is. He has chaired it, and Danny comes out of the city of Tucson as well, and in the police department there, spent his time with Oro Valley, and I hope is a significant user of the jail, not as an individual, but as a person from a police department who has a lot of information about the jail, helping us understand that group. It's made up of not only people who understand law enforcement, but we have community members, Grady Scott, others, as well as a couple of people who know the construction business to help us really understand renovation, remodeling versus new.
All right, Dan, I'm done with my old business updates. Go ahead.
The town of Sahuarita earlier this year announced that they were going to go to a four-day work week. That happens at the end of August. It was just, we've just discovered this week that the municipal court in the town is likely to be included in that, meaning it'll be closed on Friday. I spoke with Ray Carroll. He's a justice of the peace in Green Valley for the justice court. They're concerned that they're going to get dumped on, quite honestly, because, say, an order of protection has to be given on Friday. The town is closed. It's going to go to them. Have you had any discussions with Sabarita about this?
Not about the municipal court. I'll tell you that I think we are blessed to have a very good relationship with Mayor Tom Murphy and Shane Dilley, the new manager. And actually, just earlier this week, Supervisor Bronson and her staff and I were in a meeting with Tom. I'm sorry, with Mayor Murphy and Manager Dilley. One of the things we talked about was the four-day work week, and interested in feedback, how that was going to work. We did not discuss specifically the municipal court, whether that would be impacted or not. They may not have had all those decisions made at that time. I think that everything that Ray has been doing, or Justice Carroll has been doing in the Green Valley area, is causing the numbers of people that he serves to be going up remarkably and steadily, and it causes us to go back and really look at what it is we need to budget within that precinct, if you will, within that justice precinct. And we're also knowing we need to go back and look at the numbers simply for Supervisor Justice Carroll, in that the compensation is based on some of the numbers that are calculated of the cases he's heard, et cetera. They are doing a great job in that area, helping with any overflow that might be coming out of other areas, and just seeing an increase in volume. That will significantly be impacted if we see the municipal court close.
Yeah, and he's got that innovative DUI program.
Absolutely.
Too,
yeah,
right?
I was going to mention that he has remarkable staff, and they've come up with some new things, but they've also inherited from a closed precinct, if we can call it that, lines redrawn. And so they've also inherited a lot of work from that. So my concern with these innovative programs, are those going to go down on the priority list because they're just trying to deal with the day-to-day? And so this is just happening right now as we're talking.
As we're speaking.
And so there's no way that you would have all these answers, but I'm a little concerned about what will happen to our justice court.
And I know that in talking with Mayor Murphy and Manager Dilley, that there was an indication that this was something that they were going to continue to review and look closely at and see. It's not that they're doing it now and never going to turn around or make any other determinations. So I'm sure that's one of the issues that they will be watching, and we'll be watching to chat with them about.
Pima County will be constructing an open access fiber ring around Tucson's urban core. Is this a big deal, Jan Lesher?
I think it is. We received about a $30 million grant to bring that ring in, and the idea being then it helps, it's that middle mile. It's there are companies that can come right into the home and drop the line in the home. Some do the sort of that big backbone out into closer to the neighborhood, but making sure that middle mile is there, the ring is there, that then not only so that for-profit companies, other nonprofits can access that ring. We will not be providing the service into the home, but we will make sure that the ability to get those services a whole lot closer to the home, so that others who do provide those businesses can make sure that there's internet access and things. I think if one of the things we really learned during the pandemic was how important it is to have access to the internet if you're in education or anything else, and that it is not always available at the right price for everyone. So the hope is that that allows the public sector to be involved in a piece of making sure that then the private sector can, in a cost-effective way, take those lines into the homes.
Dan, do you have anything else before we let Jan go?
Yeah, real quick question, almost philosophical. What's the most common untruth you hear spoken about Pima County that you'd like to set straight?
Just one. Oh my goodness, that line.
Should have given you a heads up. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I think... I was just with a group this morning, Dan. This probably, if I thought about it a long time, there'd be more significant issues.
Sure.
But the tough one for us is having help people understanding what is Pima County and what is other jurisdictions.
Oh, yes.
To be real honest, that
yep.
And there's nothing
great.
Worse than when somebody calls government looking for help and you say, "That's not us. Call somebody else."
Mm-hmm.
That's discouraging for everyone. And just that understanding of who does what and what is which jurisdiction is tough.
Without making it look like you're saying, not my department.
Yeah, and we don't care. Go somewhere
right,
else. How do
right.
we make sure we have a warm handoff?
That's a good
How
answer.
Do we facilitate that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's always been the case here. People are very confused about what is the city and what is the county. I mean, we do not have a metro government here like they do up in where I spend a little time in the media up in Las Vegas. They have, you know, Clark County is metro government. So people who don't follow the news, or perhaps they're newcomers to the area, they don't really understand which jurisdiction is doing what.
Right. Yeah. And that's, I spend a lot of time talking with Michael Ortega from the city of Tucson about what can we do together, on what can we collaborate about.
Yeah.
But part of it is simply, how do we develop a system by which a person calls, they get directed where they need mm-hmm. to go, whether it happens to be the city or the county mm-hmm. or Oro Valley or Marana, so that there's one spot and their job is not to search down the right answer, but
yeah.
we can help do that.
And there is collaboration. We'll be talking Monday here on the show with Ms. Vasquez, who is head of...
Oh, Mari, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mari,
yep.
Who kind of is the coordinator for Pima County and the city of Tucson, looking at the homelessness and the protocols there.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Jan, thank you very much. Jan Lesher.
Thank you. Thank
All
you both.
All right, we'll take a break right here. When we come back, I've got some things for Dan Scheer right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions.
come in for your design session, or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Dan Scheer is with me from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. What is this I'm hearing about a robot over at your Jerry Bob's
probably
outlet in Green Valley? A robot is now servicing the clients?
Probably the first one in Southern Arizona. That's the educated guess. And basically what it does is it helps the service, the servers, the wait staff. And so they can put the trays of food on it, hit the button, and it knows where to go to deliver them. And then they go and deliver them. You're not picking it off as a customer yourself. And then it helps them with bussing tables because they have no bussers there.
Okay.
Now, whenever technology is introduced to the service industry, they always say, it's not going to cost job. It's not taking anybody's job. And thus far it isn't because they have no bussers at Jerry Bob's, and so it isn't. But you know what? What are these things going to be doing next? You know, cooking our food or what?
Yeah,
but it's a cool thing, though. It's just, and they're trying to name it.
The Green Valley Cemetery is now the for sale sign is out on the cemetery.
It's actually the cemetery in it's called Continental, which is a little community tucked inside of near Green Valley, and it's been around there for over 100 years, It's a nice neighborhood, just encircles it, and they didn't pay their taxes for a couple of years, and it was the deed was sold at a company bought the lien, and you cannot. There are some circumstances where you actually could develop it, but this one does not qualify. So basically, we have a cemetery up for sale. It's 3 acres, $20,000. If you're interested, read our paper on Sunday. It'll be online before then, but we have a very extensive story. And it's very interesting what you can and can't do with cemeteries. And we all remember the movie from the 80s, The Poltergeist, when they built on top of a cemetery. So no one wants that happening. But it's been a very interesting historical look. And I'll be honest, Bill, someone dropped the ball and didn't pay the taxes.
Yeah.
And that's how we ended up here.
Tom just asked me about tips for the robots over at
bolts and washers, he says.
Okay. All right. What about Rio Rico? Our listeners in the Tucson area have been seeing this in the paper here locally. What's the bottom line? What's going on with this development plan?
Well, our sister paper, the Nogales International, has been doing a great job on reporting on this. But a developer came in and said, 3,500 acres, I want to turn it into something. And everyone kind of freaked out because for the longest time, it had been really under the radar. And then suddenly, this is coming in, and he wasn't telling who the partners were, and he wasn't saying what business was going to come in and be kind of a real engine for this place. And it turns out that it was going to be a processing plant for a mine further south, in part, not obviously not the whole thing. And the people didn't want this, not now. Rio Rico is really coming into its own. In the 2020 census, we learned that they are now have a higher population than Nogales.
Really?
And growing. And so, so they really want to control what the community is going to look like, and this would have greatly changed it. The developer, amid the uproar, has since pulled the plan, and we'll see what happens next.
Will somebody else step in, though? Or?
That's a great question, and I will tell you this. The people will be paying much better attention to what's happening on the county level going forward.
Yeah, so that mine, then a piece of this was to do with the mine?
It would have been a processing plant. There's basically a silver mine, I think, south of there. I think South 22 owns it, 23, whatever. And it would have been involving some processing, and that would have been in a very prominent area. And that was what also people didn't like. And so, but they, what I also didn't like, Bill, was that they felt like it was being pushed through outside of you know, the public, you know, and suddenly someone gets wind of it and, you know, more than 100 people show up at a public meeting, which in Rio Rico is a really big deal. And so the public doesn't like things dropped on them.
Right.
But, you know, this kind of speaks to what we were talking about with Jan Lesher, is that the public also doesn't really monitor agendas and legal notices and this and that. When you need them, you need them. But they learn down there that, yeah, you should have been paying better attention to things. But the supervisors also, because it was such a big issue, I think should have reached out to the community and got some input on it.
And that's the Santa Cruz County.
That's exactly right.
And they have a three-member board? Is that?
I think it's three.
Three-member.
So
we've only got about a minute, but when I was talking about your home company, WIC, now with over 30 newspapers, are there some interesting, perhaps, buys out there for smaller papers?
There are, and we believe in it. And when we say newspaper, we're talking digital here. We certainly believe in the print product, but digital affords us to get the news out in lots of different ways. It could be through newsletters, it could be a social media site, it could be our own websites, lots of different things. And so don't think newspaper and that dead piece of woods on the driveway. It's just not that anymore. That's just a very small part of it. And so
you're looking at multiple platforms.
Absolutely. One story, lots of platforms. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that we're still pumping out local news, which has the highest interest for people. And given the contraction of the big metro papers, the Star would be one of them, there's fewer and fewer reporters out there, and we're pretty much it in our area unless it's a really big story. Mm-hmm. And so if you live there and you have an investment in that community, you want to be in touch with your local paper, but the papers have to be good, Bill. Mm-hmm. And if they're not good, people aren't going to read them, and I don't blame them.
All right. Okay, Dan Scheer, always a pleasure. Thank you, Dan. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell next on the Buckmaster Friday edition.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat.
Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
And away we go with Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And I like those temperatures over in Silver City. 10 degrees cooler while we push toward 110. It's the lower 90s right now over in Silver City. It's cooler because the elevation is higher. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do. Check out their website on the recreational opportunities, where to stay, and even where to dine at southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is, award-winning Tucson publicist, dedicated foodie, the longtime host of Weekend Watch, Matt Russell. Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. Just dreaming about Silver City, though, as we head into a record-breaking heat weekend here in Tucson, I tell you.
Yeah, you know, I was telling Tom at the beginning of the show, I have one word for Tucson in 2023, and that is excess.
For sure.
Too many excess heat announcements. One thing we have covered through the years, now 13 and a half years with the show, lots of grand openings for restaurants.
Yeah, you know what? And we got another one to report. So we've all heard about Chicago-style pizza. Of course, there's New York-style pizza. There's even a Detroit-style of pizza that's been trending lately. But did you ever wonder what a Tucson pizza would look like? Well, wonder no more, Bill Buckmaster, because Pizza Sonora is open for business. They're having their grand opening scheduled for today at 5 p.m., they're out on the patio of the Moto Sonora Brewing Company on South Park Avenue. So just imagine elote pizza with roasted Mexican street corn. They've got a Sonoran dog pizza with all the hot diggity dog elements that you'd expect to find on this pie. And, of course, they have some pepperoni and other classic pizzas to satisfy the otherwise pedestrian palate. But finally, Tucson has its own pizza. So check out Pizza Sonora today.
Wine tasting is so popular, especially on the weekend. Anything in that category, Matt Russell?
Yeah, and I've got a big one for you, Bill. It's our good friends over at Simon Hazel Cellars on Sunrise and Kolb are hosting what they're calling a reserve list fine wine tasting tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. Now, this event is going to showcase some truly spectacular wines from the best vineyards around the world, really focusing on rare and collectible wines. So the event includes six wines presented individually with an assortment of meats and cheeses. Each guest is going to have a seat at the table with extraordinarily formal table settings, but there's limited seating and reservations are a must. So visit simonhazel.com for information and registration.
Wow, this sounds like the really big time wines, Matt.
This is it, like sort of bucket list wines, in fact. So this is a must not miss if you're an onophile. Yep.
You know, we love Tucson Originals, the homegrown folks. Do they have anything going on?
Yeah, you know what? One of their annual events that I really love is happening this weekend, which pairs some pretty amazing brews with some delicious bites. So what's it called? Brews and Bites, of course, and it's tomorrow from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Highlands at Dove Mountain in Marana. Now, here's how it works. There's going to be several two-person teams of local chefs, each paired with a different local brewery, all collaborating to create small plate and beer pairings. And if you go out there, you'll be able to cast your vote for your favorite brew and bite pairing and schmooze with some of the best chefs and brewers in town. So tickets are $50 in advance, $60 at the door, and everything else you need to know, Bill, is at TucsonOriginals.com.
Hey, I don't know if you heard Dan Scheer talking about the robots have arrived at the restaurants. Jerry Bob's down in Green Valley, they've got a robot who's doing some, bussing tables and stuff like that. And Tom was trying to figure out, how in the world do we tip that robot?
Just a little gas and a little oil change. You know, that's all they need from time to time. But I think I prefer the human being experience when I go out to eat. But, yeah, we'll see how long that one lasts.
Have a great weekend. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by our German friend, Christophon. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, and everybody here at KVOI, including my engineer producer, Tom Fairbanks, the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. All of us have one wish for you, actually a couple of wishes. Be well, everybody. Stay safe and have a great weekend.